Hello and welcome back to your GCSE Chemistry Revision Podcast. I'm so glad you're here because today we're diving into one of the most foundational topics in the entire specification, topic C2, elements, compounds, and mixtures. And I promise you, by the end of this episode, you're going to feel genuinely confident about this topic. Now, I know what some of you might be thinking, elements and compounds, I've known about those since year 7. But here's the thing. This topic goes much deeper than that. We're talking about chemical bonding, separation techniques, carbon allotropes, nanoparticles, and all of it's regularly examined. In fact, questions from this topic appear on virtually every GCSE chemistry paper, so getting it right is absolutely worth your time. So grab a pen, maybe a highlighter, and let's get into it. Let's start with the absolute basics, because the exam loves to catch students out on definitions they think they already know. First up, what is a pure substance? Now, in everyday language, we say things like pure orange juice or pure spring water, meaning it hasn't been tampered with, it's natural. But in chemistry, pure has a very specific scientific meaning. A pure substance contains only one type of particle, either a single element or a single compound. Nothing else. So pure water is just H2O molecules. That's it. No dissolved minerals, no anything else. This is a really common exam question. They'll ask you to distinguish between the scientific and everyday use of the word pure. And candidates who don't know this distinction lose marks every single time. How do we identify a pure substance? By its melting point. A pure substance melts at a precise, sharp temperature. An impure substance, a mixture, melts over a range of temperatures. So if you're given melting point data in an exam, and asked whether a substance is pure, look for that sharp, single melting point. That's your clue. Now let's talk about elements, compounds, and mixtures. An element contains only one type of atom. A compound contains two or more different elements chemically bonded together. A mixture contains two or more substances that are not chemically bonded. They're just physically mixed together. The key word there is chemically bonded. In a compound, the elements are bonded. You can't just physically separate them. In a mixture, they're not bonded, so you can separate them using physical methods. Which brings us beautifully onto separation techniques. There are four main ones you need to know. Filtration, crystallization, distillation, and chromatography. Filtration is used to separate an insoluble solid from a liquid. Think of it like a sieve. The liquid passes through the filter paper, and the solid is left behind as the residue. The liquid that passes through is called the filtrate. Crystallization is used to obtain a dissolved solid from a solution. You heat the solution to evaporate the water, and as it cools, crystals form. This is how you get copper sulfate crystals from a copper sulfate solution, for example. Distillation is used to separate a liquid from a mixture based on different boiling points. In simple distillation, you heat the mixture, the liquid with the lower boiling point evaporates first, travels through a condenser, cools back down, and is collected as the distillate. Fractional distillation is used when you have liquids with similar boiling points, like separating crude oil into fractions. And then there's chromatography, which is used to separate mixtures of dissolved substances, most commonly colored pigments in inks or dyes. You draw a pencil baseline on chromatography paper, add a spot of the mixture, and place the paper in a solvent. As the solvent travels up the paper, it carries the different substances with it. But different substances travel different distances. The result is a chromatogram with separated spots. Now here's the bit that always comes up in calculations, the RF value. RF stands for retention factor. The formula is RF equals the distance traveled by the spot divided by the distance traveled by the solvent front. The RF value is always between 0 and 1. It has no units. If two substances have the same RF value in the same solvent, they're likely to be the same substance. Examiners love asking you to calculate RF values and use them to identify unknown substances. So practice this calculation until it's second nature. Right now, let's move on to bonding, and this is where things get really interesting. There are three types of chemical bonding: ionic, covalent, and metallic. And the type of bonding a substance has determines all of its physical properties. Its melting point, whether it conducts electricity, whether it dissolves in water, everything. Ionic bonding occurs between a metal and a nonmetal. Electrons are transferred from the metal atom to the nonmetal atom. The metal loses electrons and becomes a positively charged ion, a a cation. The nonmetal gains electrons and becomes a negatively charged ion, an anion. These oppositely charged ions are then attracted to each other by strong electrostatic forces. This is the ionic bond. The ions arrange themselves into a giant ionic lattice, a regular repeating 3D structure. Because of this strong lattice, ionic compounds have high melting points. They don't conduct electricity when solid because the ions are fixed in place. But when molten or dissolved in water, the ions are free to move, so they deoconduct electricity. Covalent bonding occurs between nonmetals. Instead of transferring electrons, the atoms share pairs of electrons. Each shared pair is a covalent bond. Simple covalent molecules like water, H2O, or hydrogen, H2, have strong bonds within the molecule, but only weak forces between molecules. This means they have low melting and boiling points, and they don't conduct electricity. Giant covalent structures like diamond and silicon dioxide have covalent bonds extending throughout the entire structure. This means they have very high melting points and are very hard. They generally don't conduct electricity either, with the exception of graphite and graphene. Metallic bonding is found in metals. The metal atoms lose their outer electrons, which become delocalized. They're free to move throughout the structure. You're left with a lattice of positive metal ions surrounded by a sea of delocalized electrons. These delocalized electrons are what make metals such good conductors of electricity and heat. The strong electrostatic attraction between the positive ions and the negative electrons gives metals their high melting points and strength. Now, a special mention for carbon allotropes, because examiners absolutely love this. Carbon is fascinating because it can exist in several different structural forms, each with completely different properties. Diamond has each carbon atom bonded to four others in a giant covalent structure, making it the hardest natural substance. Graphite has each carbon atom bonded to only three others in flat hexagonal layers. The fourth electron from each carbon is delocalized between the layers, which is why graphite conducts electricity. The layers can also slide over each other, making graphite soft and slippery. Useful as a lubricant, Buckminster fullerene, or C60, is a hollow ball of 60 carbon atoms. It has potential uses in drug delivery, and graphene is a single layer of graphite, just one atom thick, making it incredibly strong and an excellent conductor. Finally, let's touch on nanoparticles. Nanoparticles are particles between 1 and 100 nanometers in size. The key concept here is surface area to volume ratio. As particles get smaller, their surface area to volume ratio increases dramatically. This means nanoparticles have very different properties from the bulk material. They can be much more reactive, for example. This is why silver nanoparticles are used in antibacterial coatings. However, there are risks associated with nanoparticles because they're so small they can penetrate cell membranes and potentially cause harm. Examiners often ask you to evaluate the benefits and risks of nanoparticles. Right, let's talk exam technique, because knowing the content is only half the battle. The biggest mistake I see candidates make is using the word pure in its everyday sense. If a question asks, what does pure mean in a scientific context, you must say it contains only one type of particle, not it's natural or it hasn't been processed. That will not earn marks. Second, big mistake, confusing ions with molecules. Ionic compounds don't have molecules. They have ions arranged in a lattice. Never say ionic molecules. Examiners will not credit this. Third mistake, when drawing dot and cross diagrams, candidates often forget to show the correct number of electrons in each shell. Remember, the first shell holds 2 electrons, the second and third shells hold up to 8. And you must show the transfer of electrons for ionic bonding, or the sharing of electrons for covalent bonding. For calculation questions, particularly RF values and relative formula mass, always show you're working. Even if you get the final answer wrong, you can still earn method marks. And always check whether the question asks for units. RF values have no units. Relative formula mass has no units either. For 6-mark questions, structure your answer clearly, use the command word as your guide. If it says explain, you must give reasons. Use the word because. If it says describe, you just need to say what happens. If it says evaluate, you need to consider both benefits and risks and reach a conclusion. One more tip. When a question asks about properties and bonding, always link the two explicitly. Don't just say, ionic compounds have high melting points. Say, ionic compounds have high melting points because there are strong electrostatic forces of attraction between the oppositely charged ions, and a large amount of energy is needed to overcome these forces. That's the kind of answer that earns full marks. Right, quiz time? I'll ask the question, give you a few seconds to think, then give you the answer. Question 1. What is the scientific definition of a pure substance? A pure substance contains only one type of particle, a single element or a single compound. Question 2. What is the formula for RF value? RF equals distance traveled by the spot divided by distance traveled by the solvent front. Question 3. Why does graphite conduct electricity but diamond does not? In graphite, each carbon atom bonds to three others, leaving one delocalized electron per atom that can carry charge. In diamond, all four outer electrons are used in bonding, so there are no free electrons. Question 4. What happens to the surface area to volume ratio as particle size decreases? It increases. Question 5. Name the three types of chemical bonding: ionic, covalent, and metallic. Brilliant work getting through this episode. Let's do a quick summary of the key points to take away. 1. Pure substances contain only one type of particle and have a sharp melting point. Mixtures melt over a range. 2. The four separation techniques are filtration, crystallization, distillation, and chromatography. Know when to use each one. 3. RF equals distance traveled by spot divided by distance traveled by solvent front. No units. Always between 0 and 1. 4. Ionic bonding involves electron transfer between metals and nonmetals. Covalent bonding involves electron sharing between nonmetals. Metallic bonding involves a lattice of positive ions in a sea of delocalized electrons. 5. Carbon, allotropes, diamond, graphite, fullerenes, and graphene all have very different properties because of their different structures. 6. Nanoparticles have a high surface area to volume ratio, giving them unique properties, but also potential risks. That's it for today's episode. Keep revising, keep practicing past paper questions, and remember, every mark you earn in the exam is a mark you worked for. You've got this. See you next time.